All right, 11 o'clock hour here on a Friday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold with you. Drew Nixon producing the show. Logan Weber is in for Cody today. We will get to the trash of the day here in about 20 minutes. Got audio on this one. It's a doozy. It's a pretty good one, I must say. I'll warn you if you think about grabbing lunch in a particular food item, but it's perfect for trash of the day. Today, reminder later on in the show, in the 1 o'clock hour, it's a Fan Club Friday brought to you by Jay Rieger and Circus Sports. We will have John Kurtz joining us to talk a lot of college football in the 1 o'clock hour. But let's talk some NFL, not only the Chiefs, but around the league a little bit. We go out to the Golden Oak Lending phone line and welcome in Matt Verderam from Sports Illustrated NFL staff writer, also the Matt Verderam Show on Patreon. Be sure to check that out if you don't already. I'm sure you already follow him at Matt Verderam on Twitter and X. Matt, good to have you on. I want to start with the Chiefs, though, and I know a couple days ago you had sent out a tweet about it, but just the latest on some of these injuries, man. I think people get nervous when you hear back injury for an offensive lineman, knowing you already got Trey Smith dealing with a hip injury. What are you hearing on a couple of the injuries in the last couple of days for the Chiefs, including that Simmons back injury?
Yeah, you know, listen, I mean, I've talked to people in the building who would certainly be in the know, and the overwhelming feeling, listen, Simmons is fine. Like, literally, the wording that I got. I mean, I think it's a little bit of a, you know, more cautious approach right now. I think if this was during the season, it would be a non-issue. It's more, hey, look, it's the middle of August. There's no reason to push it. But I don't sense any real concern. And then with Smith, you know, if it goes through next week and he's not practicing, I'd have some concern. I know he went to see a specialist. They genuinely, at this point, are not concerned. But, you know, a hip can be a little bit of a tricky thing. He's a big body. I mean, we're not talking about some guy who's 180 pounds. He is obviously, you know, he's 315, whatever he is. So it's at this juncture, there's no real concern. But, you know, listen, we get toward the last few days of August and one or both are not there. Then you have to say, okay, well, is there maybe a need for a reevaluation? But right now, I don't think there's any real sense of concern in the building.
And if the expectation is, and it ends up coming out that those two guys are going to miss time, or even one of those two guys, what do you think the shuffle is along the offensive line for this Chiefs team? If Simmons misses, is it Jalen Moore at left tackle, Khalil Benson at right tackle, or if Trey Smith is out, who replaces him at that right guard position?
I think if Trey Smith is out, Benson's the right guard and Moore is the right tackle. And I think if Simmons is out, yeah, you probably do what you said. You flip more over to the left side, and then Benson's on the right side. Look, I don't think right now there's really any concern of that happening. Now, of course, it could happen during the season. I mean, mm-hmm. Guy could, you know, pull a hamstring or something. And that is a real concern with this team, is the depth of the offensive line. They don't have it. They do not have depth on their offensive line. It's a major problem. Like, I do think – if there's an area, you know, we've talked about receiver and pass rusher all off season. If there's an area where they can use their position on the waiver wire, which is ninth, to claim a guy, claim a proven veteran who can just be a swing tackle, or maybe even, I think more importantly, quite honestly, somebody on the interior, you know, backup guard, I think they'll do it. Because right now, look, if Simmons and Moore and Benson are healthy, and even you want to throw in Esipola, they have guys they're confident in. They really like Paulie the way he played at the end of the last season. But on the interior right now, your backup guard is probably your UDFA potential starting right tackle. And I don't think that they want to see Norzad, Hanson, Caliendo out there. I mean, that spells doom. So if there's a guy who they can either trade for, maybe on a late round pick swap, or pick up on the waiver wire, I think that might be a move we see the Chiefs make here in the next couple of weeks.
We're talking to Matt Verderam from Sports Illustrated here on 96.5 The Fan. We know preseason game number two tomorrow night in Tampa. Other than R. Mason Thomas, because especially now with the Jelani injury, I really want to see him play more tomorrow, yeah. or we'll see how the Chiefs handle that. Who are you most looking forward to? I mean, it's going to be the first action for Mansoor Delay, and so he's got to be pretty high up on the list too, I would imagine.
He is. For me, it's Benson. Because you're going to get a real look at a front four in the Bucs that has some talent here. I mean, Reuben Bain, who, of course, is the apple of many eyes in Kansas City over the draft process. And then you're going to get Al-Qadim Muhammad, who had 11 sacks last year from the Lions. He's the other defense man. Vita Vey, I wouldn't expect to be playing, but you know, this is a, you know, the Kalijah Kancic inside, and it's a good front. This is a real front, and Todd Bowles, he will bring pressure. Even in the preseason, he likes to blitz. He likes to give some different looks. This is not going to be the Rams' second stringers. This is going to be, what do you got up front? Now, the other guys, it's kind of hard to evaluate, right? I mean, Mahomes isn't going to play. I don't know if you're going to see Rice or Worthy. So then it becomes, okay, it's going to be Justin Fields and Garrett Nussmeier throwing a Cyrus out. It's hard to evaluate that. I don't know. Yeah, sure, you can look at the routes and everything else. I will say this. I think Evan Johnson's interesting in this regard. I would argue he was the best player on the field for either team on Saturday when they played the Rams. He goes out and he's really, really good again. Like, he's got to be your second string running back, right? I mean, DeMarcado barely saw action in the first game, played a little bit in the fourth quarter. I just wonder, is Johnson, does he show enough where Bieniemy and Reed get together and go, hey, man, you know what? We got to get the ball in this guy's hands, even if it's five times a game. Like, we have to try to find a way. Maybe he's a guy who can keep Walker fresh, spell him a little bit, maybe be this, you know, team's version of Zach Charbonnet, where he's a, you know, he's a second option of Walker. We'll see. Long way to go for that to happen, but I am intrigued by the way he plays.
Yeah, Emmett Johnson looked great. My only thing has been, and it's not that I don't think he's a good runner when the football's in his hand, is you and I know that they have to trust him in pass protection as well. And so I need to see him tomorrow, or I think the Chiefs need to see him tomorrow. Can he handle a blitz pickup or two? If he starts doing that, then absolutely.
We're going to find out with Todd Bowles.
Yeah, which is good.
They're blitzing. Like, they're going to do, I mean, and you know, just listen, for people out there listening, coaches will talk about this stuff in preseason games. You know, Andy and Todd Bowles will get together for a game. Hey, you know, it wouldn't be the worst if we saw a blitz pack. Could you, you know, could you give us a twist? Could you give us a stunt? Could you? I mean, these guys do this stuff in preseason. You know, it's a fraternity. They know each other. A lot of them go back years. They're good friends. Like, I'm not saying that they're going to sit there and go, hey, you know, give us 20 hooks that we need. But if Andy goes up to Todd Bowles, hey, you know, listen, we're trying to figure out if this guy can give this, you know, this, that, or the other. Sometimes coaches will help each other out, too, in that regard.
As we're talking about the offense, young guys participating, you know, there's been a lot of hype during the course of training camp and even the first week of the preseason with Cyrus Allen. There was a little scare with that injury in regards to him. What are your thoughts on Cyrus Allen, how he's performed? What do you expect from him on Saturday and how he can be a productive member of this wide receiver core this year?
Well, look, I am always one of the people in media. I take everything in training camp with a pile of salt because it's just hard to evaluate. A lot of times, you know, you'll see a guy in a third team destroying people, and it's like, yeah, but he's going against a corner who's going to be selling Allstate insurance. Like, it just doesn't, like, it doesn't translate. Cyrus Allen has been cooking the daylights out of everybody they put in front of him. And the Chiefs have good corners, which is a crazy thing to say after getting rid of McDuffie and Watson, but they do. Like, the Chiefs, I think, provided Delane is good, and I think he's going to be very good, him and he and O'Williams, that's a really good combination outside. And Cyrus Allen has just taken turns, just crushing each one of them at times in practice. I think there's a real chance that Cyrus Allen, by the end of the year, people sit there and are like, is he the best receiver on the team? And I think part of that is, I have no idea what you're getting from Rashee Rice. But part of that is also, when you watch this kid, he's not just winning against, you know, lesser talent. He's not winning because he runs a 4.240 and he hasn't had the route tree, but he's just outrunning guys. He is constantly wide open. And he's constantly wide open because of the way he runs routes. But I can tell you, I've talked to people over the last, you know, week, 2 weeks within the team and tried to get a gauge. What do you think? I mean, everybody sees these clips, but what do you think? I'm yet to talk to one person who doesn't think they're just over the moon about it. I mean, I know Albert Breer, my colleague, went to Chiefs camp. I did not go this year. He went out there, and there was talk about, like, look, he has a Stephon Diggs type of ability. I mean, this is a guy who was a Pro Bowler year in, year out. So I don't expect him to be Stephon Diggs this year, to be clear. But I do think there's a real world where, despite Reed's hesitancy, if you will, to play rookie receivers a lot of times, because of how good he's been and how many questions the rest of the group has, I don't know that Reed's going to be able to just sit there and wait this one out. I think this kid's going to play quite a bit, and I think he's going to be playing quite a bit pretty early.
We're talking to Matt Verderam from Sports Illustrated here on 96.5 The Fan. All right, away from the Chiefs a little bit, just across the NFL, staying in the West, we saw another preseason game last night from Fernando Mendoza. Yes, he had the pick six. Yes, he thanked Joe Buck. What's the status, do you think, of when he could actually be a starter for the Raiders? I keep looking at their schedule, and I feel like they would start him at home, given the fact that he was the number one overall pick. And that Chiefs-Raiders game in week 4 or 5 is standing out to me.
I don't know if they'll do it that early. Look, if you're the Raiders, so the thing about these moves, right, from the veteran to the rookie, is once you do it, you better be right.
Sure.
Not because of Kirk Cousins, right? Like, they don't care if they offend Kirk Cousins. Like they care less. But they don't want to do what we saw in Indianapolis with Anthony Richardson, where he'd go in the game, he'd get two games, they'd yank him for Gardner Minshew. He'd go back in, he'd struggle again, they'd yank him out, they'd put in some other veteran. Like, that stuff destroys young kids. And let's be real with the Raiders. They're going nowhere this year. That team is not good. And so if you're Clint Kubiak, if you're the general manager, John Spisak, you're sitting there looking at this going, all right, when can we get this kid in here when it behooves not only the development of our team, but also, most importantly, his development? I think that's probably around Halloween, you know, maybe a little before the midway point of the year. Like, the Chiefs game's interesting because it is a home game, and, you know, that's week, 4? The downside of that is you're going to get Spagnuolo in that game, and it's going to be blitzes galore. Hey, man, good luck. Like, here's 9 pressure packages you've never seen in your life. Good luck picking it up. Like, I think if you're them, you probably want Cousins to take a game like that. And, hey, you know, if Cousins takes 4 or 5 sacks and throws a pick, all right. You know, whatever. Like, I think that for the Raiders, it's all about waiting until you know that you don't have to go back the other way.
Looking around the National Football League as we get closer and closer to the start of the year, there's been a ton of conversation about the running game because there was a huge influx of it a season ago. Right. Is that something that you see kind of a trend that continues? Do you think league wide we see more of a focus on the ground game, or do we kind of revert back a little bit to what we've come to know in the past in modern NFL football, where we see the ball get aired out a little bit more?
So there's been a trend the last couple of years toward running the ball more. And I actually, in our SI NFL preview that is out on newsstand, shameless plug, but I wrote my preview piece in there for us was a feature on Sean McVay and his coaching tree, how he's affected the game and impacted the game. And I had a sidebar in there, and it's all about literally how teams are starting to deviate from what we saw over the last decade. And I talked to Kevin O'Connell for it, and I talked to Shane Waldron, the assistant head coach with the Jaguars. And I've talked to many other coaches off the record. I talked to Lou Anarumo on the record for the story. And here's the general consensus. Look, defenses adjusted to this influx, this massive increase in passing, by getting smaller and faster. They got smaller up front. They got faster on the second level. They got these guys who can run and cover in space as linebackers. And up front, you know, we all grew up, I'm 38, we all grew up with guys who were like, you know, 280-pound defensive ends, right? Like the Reggie Whites of the world, Bruce Smith, big guys. Their defensive ends now are like 240 pounds. And so smart coaches have looked at this and said, okay, well, the defensive lines keep getting smaller. The offensive lines keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Guys are 330, 335. But why don't we just run it at them? And that's why you're seeing more under center, because it's more beneficial to the run game. Running backs prefer to get that head start. They don't. A lot of them don't like running at a gun. Kenneth Walker's a guy who, if you look at his numbers, the splits are pretty vast. I think we're starting to see, too, this wide tight end, this inline blocking tight end. That's a position that was drafted heavily in the second and third rounds, because teams feel like if they're putting 2 and 3 tight ends on the field, they're giving you a look that you have to kind of play the run. You've got to get more into your base defense, and yet you can still throw out of that if you have some guys who are at least somewhat adept at catching the ball. You have to respect it. And so it puts these teams in a bind. The Rams did that last year. The Rams played three tight ends 30% of the time last year. Nobody else played more than 15%. I expect to see those numbers go up quite a bit. I do think the trend is going to continue to be get under center, run the ball, play action off that. Teams want to open up shot plays down the field that way. I do think the Chiefs are on trend in that regard with a guy like Walker. We've seen them a lot more under center in camp. They want to play that way because it's forcing these defenses to be a little more honest. I think in past years, they've started to cheat toward the pass, and now offenses are trying to punish them for it.
Last one for you before we let you go. Matt Verderam joining us here on 96.5 The Fan. We saw in the last week or so Aaron Donald worked out once again at the Rams facility. What are you hearing out there when it comes to the real chances of him joining them at some point during the season?
I think people on the whole, if you took a straw poll of 50 people, you'd probably get 30 of them say, yeah, I think he's going to play. I think he's going to come back. My expectation would be, even if he does come back, it's going to be on a limited basis. I don't think all of a sudden he's jumping in there and playing 90% of the snaps.
Sure.
I think it would be more of a, hey, man, we're going to pick our spots. We're going to have you rush the passer. It's a hard thing to gauge how much this is really going to matter, even if he does come back. And he hasn't played 2 years. He's 35 years old. I know he's Aaron Donald. I know he's amazing. But, you know, I mean, the human body is the human body. In the last couple of years, he's starting to feel it a little bit. I do think it's a better chance than not that he comes back and plays. I also think it's a better chance than not that he's kind of a pick-our-spot type of guy, more than just a, hey, we're going to trot him out there for 50 snaps a game.
Matt Verderam, Sports Illustrated. Be sure to check out Matt on X as well. Appreciate it as always, man. Enjoy the weekend.
Hey, thanks a lot. Take care, guys.
There you go. Matt Verderam with us here on Cody and Gold. All right, we got the Chiefs Red Half Hour coming up in 10 minutes, but let's get to the trash.
Trash of the day.
All right, Logan, trash of the day today takes us to a Popeyes. When's the last time you went to Popeyes?
Oh, it's been a while.
Okay. But
I had
Popeyes
before.
Yeah,
I was still living in Springfield at that time.
Okay.
Really? It's been that long?
It's been that long. It's probably been two and a half or three years.
You just had it this week?
Yeah.
I probably haven't had Popeyes in at least 4 or 5 months, at least. But nothing against them at all. All right. Just listen to this news story. This is a real story, I promise you.
Popeye's employee in Louisiana was fired and could face a lawsuit after he farted on raw chicken and served it to customers. The incident started when the employee posted a disturbing video online. In the video, he walked into the restaurant's raw chicken storage area, opened a package of uncooked chicken, sat on it, and farted on the food. After that, he appeared to take the same chicken, cook it in the fryer, and serve it to customers. A few days later, some customers discovered the video online. When they watched it carefully, they realized the employee in the video was the same person who had prepared their meals at the restaurant that day. The customers said they immediately felt disgusted and sick after realizing they might have eaten the chicken shown in the video. They brought the evidence to the restaurant and contacted Popeye's corporate, demanding compensation and an investigation. Popeye's fired the employee and hired lawyers to take legal action against him. After the video went viral, many people said this was exactly why they avoid fast food, because customers never know what happens in the kitchen before their food is served. Others said anyone who intentionally does something like this should face serious consequences.
Agreed.
This, to me, should be treated the same as that sicko that at that local Kansas City restaurant a couple years ago that was doing some disgusting stuff to food as well. I'm not going to get back into that.
Jail time, arguably.
That person's going to jail as well. To me, this is no different. If you're sitting bare ass on the raw chicken and farting on it,
what are you thinking?
That is major. You should be going to jail. Absolutely.
I don't know what to make of this. I mean, first of all, the sound effect was so unbelievably necessary and unnecessary all at the
Popeye's
same time.
Employee in Louisiana was.
I don't know that I needed that, and I didn't need that.
Very top text. I hope this person's not lying. Says in all caps, I'm literally eating Popeyes right now. I don't know if I can keep eating. LOL.
Yeah.
This should be a class action lawsuit. This should be this worker who they obviously fired right away should be absolutely going to jail as well. I mean, that's awful.
Also, in your right, there's no part of you in your right mind that you think of doing. Like, what made you think of doing this? Did you think it was funny?
And it was on video. The idiot
you have
recorded
to know
it.
There needs to, yeah, whatever the case ends up being, if this person ends up in jail or a psychiatric facility, this person needs to have an evaluation take place.
What? Face a lawsuit after he farted on raw chicken and served it to customers.
Raw chicken. That's the thing. Like, I don't know if it's, I don't know if it would have been better if it was fully cooked and then he farted, but raw chicken, like, just farted on raw chicken and then they threw it in the fryer. So it's just cooking in the fecal matter.
I mean,
that's gross, dude.
I don't know what. Part of me thinks it being cooked would be worse, because then it's like, part of me thinks it got cooked off and cooked out in the heat.
That's what I'd like to think as well.
I would like to think that the disgustingness got like cooked out of it, but I get what you're saying.
Were they? They didn't pull that fart sound from the video.
And he sat on it. He didn't just like squat over it, right?
Popeye's employee in Louisiana was fired and could face a lawsuit after he farted on raw chicken and served it to customers. The incident started when the employee posted a disturbing video online. In the video, he walked into the restaurant's raw chicken storage area, opened a package of uncooked chicken, sat on it, and farted on the food.
So he was on the chicken, Logan.
So he sat on it. He put his ass on the chicken. Like, it's one thing to just, like, squat and hover over it, but to just put cheeks on the raw chicken and then fart is gross.
That's crazy.
I warned you guys, if you were having lunch today, I warned you. I gave you a 20-minute notice.
I hadn't eaten lunch yet. I may not after that.
What is safe to eat these days, honestly? We can't, you know, we got the lettuce problem. We apparently got chicken getting farted on at national chains. There was some other food that got like recalled or something recently. I saw jalapenos or whatever at some
bread.
Restaurant.
Bread is the only thing.
Man, oh man. Someone says it's better than the diarrhea lettuce. I've had no problems with the lettuce. I'm just saying.
Nope. I've been no forever diarrhea free to this point.
No problems with the lettuce. Yeah. Knock on wood there, Logan.
Made sure.
All right, that's the trash.
Have you gone to Taco Bell since, Logan? Since this whole deal came out?
Okay. Dude, I eat Taco Bell once a week.
You go once a week?
Once a week. It's my favorite fast food restaurant.
Have you had the lettuce on anything yet? Still?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I live on the Missouri side, though. As far as I know, there have been no confirmed cases of it in Missouri. There were some in Kansas, I think.
Yes, I believe there
were. But it was mostly confined to, like, Indiana, Ohio, and Michigan. It was, like, some of that, like,
Midwest. Yeah, it says Missouri has reported nearly 2,000 cases of this whatever
careful,
it is.
Careful, Logan. Careful. Careful.
That has to have been recently, because I probably haven't seen any diarrhea lettuce stories in a couple weeks.
More than here was an article five days ago from Fox 4. Missouri sees rise of nearly 400 cases, according to the latest data release. The state is reporting. It talks about the parasite causing watery.
I was with the diarrhea lettuce thing when the news of it first dropped, and kind of haven't paid attention to it since. So I need to.
Kansas has 748 cases. Missouri has 1950.
Oof.
Okay. Yeah, I will say you still eating at Taco Bell and having lettuce at Taco Bell is crazier than Gold just having lettuce at Chipotle.
Well, I've had Taco Bell since it started.
Have you had the lettuce? Have you had lettuce?
And they put on the taco. Yeah.
Okay, well, you guys are.
I don't go once a week, but have I had a Taco Bell taco since this whole lettuce mess?
I have since dabbled back. I've added lettuce back to the palate, but Taco Bell,
I mean, in my defense, like in the last 2 or 3 weeks, I have sort of only been eating the quesarito because it's back if you use the Taco Bell app, and I absolutely love myself the quesarito. So that doesn't have lettuce in it. I don't have to worry about
You're saying when you use the app, that's all you need to know, that you go there often.
Oh, God, yeah, dude.
All right, up next, let's get to the Chiefs for a half hour. Let's talk about some of the most important players on offense besides Mahomes and who needs to have a big day tomorrow to save their roster spot.
Welcome into the Chiefs Red Half Hour every day at 11:30 on Cody and Gold on your home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
That's right. It is the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Alex Gold, Drew Nixon, Logan Weber with you here on a Friday. I think Bink might come in about 5 to 10 minutes or so. He just walked in the studio. He's already here. Yeah. He's already here. He's phoned in for Carrington this afternoon. And because he's already here, I said, hey, if you want to join us for the Chiefs Red Half Hour, by all means. So he's probably going to walk in here in a couple minutes. He was already talking about this college football news, which we'll probably get to with him as well, as the court cases in college football just continue to become messier
and messier.
We'll get you caught up on what happened today, but it is a cluster, you know what. But let's talk some Chiefs football for that person that texted in yesterday. We'll keep it as much Chiefs as possible for the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Yes. Yesterday we had a short show, Logan. And so whenever we hand it off to Vern at noon, the last half hour is normally, you know, the Chiefs Red half hour. But when it stays like that, we don't do full Chiefs in it because it's not. And somebody texted it and was not happy about that. So anyway, we'll talk Chiefs as much as possible here, I promise.
Can't please everybody.
Before we get to who needs to have a big day tomorrow, which I think is different from the conversation of who we're most excited to watch. When you look at this offense, other than Patrick Mahomes, who clearly is the most important player, we all know that. Who do you think is the next most in ranking out? We briefly got into this conversation while we were up in St. Joe. Cody, myself, and Drew were talking about it, but we didn't dive deep into it. So I wanted to see where you're at on this as well as the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. After Mahomes, who are the next four or five most important players on offense this year? Because I think there's a certainly a case for multiple pieces in this. I still think when you look at the way the offense plays out, I would say that this entire offense is built also around Kenneth Walker. So there's a strong case that Walker's the first answer and then Rashee Rice, or you could flip the two. But I think it's probably Kenneth Walker initially. How do you rank it out? Because for me, if I were to do this exercise real quickly, I would say Kenneth Walker, Rashee Rice, then you could probably tell me it's Josh Simmons. And then after that, maybe you flip with Kelsey. We did it earlier. We were doing it just quickly off the top of our head. I had Kelsey much higher. I had Kelsey number two. And then as we've thought about it more, I moved him down the list a bit.
I got most of the same names on my list, just a slightly different order. I think Josh Simmons is the second most important player on this offense from the standpoint of how important Patrick Mahomes is and having a consistent figure at the left tackle position, something that has been missing from Patrick Mahomes' career pretty much since the day Eric Fisher left. If he's important because he needs to be that guy to protect the blind side of Patrick Mahomes, especially this season with him coming off of the ACL tear. If you can limit the amount of movement that Patrick Mahomes has to do on any given play, that's the ideal scenario if you're the Kansas City Chiefs. So I look at Josh Simmons as the second most important player for what he can provide Mahomes from a protection standpoint. And also from the standpoint of the fan base and the organization, just knowing they have a guy at left tackle. We're all sitting here thinking that Josh Simmons could potentially be the last left tackle that Patrick Mahomes will play with in his career. He's got that level of talent. Can he be consistent? Can he be out there on the field? Can he avoid injury? That's what makes me believe that Josh Simmons is an incredibly important part of this offense.
Yeah, he's super important. The only thing, like, I agree with your point about long-term in the future. I just viewed it as, for this year, long-term, Josh Simmons is probably the, like, Kelsey would be way further down the list if we were factoring right in over the next 5 years who's the most important. I just think that to me is a different conversation. If we said over the next 5 years who's most important, well, then Josh Simmons, hell, Xavier Worthy would be much higher on the list. Khalil Benson would be potentially on my list. Like, that changes it. For this particular season, I think it's a little different. But yeah, Josh Simmons is definitely very, very high on there. I still think Rashee Rice has to be, if he's not number two for you, I think he has to be in that three conversation, just because for this year's team and this offense, the difference of him being on the field and not being on the field. If he's not on the field, I know we all are excited about Cyrus Allen, but let's be realistic. If there's no Rashee Rice for more than, let's say, if he was only on the field for 6 or 7 games this year, and you're asking Xavier Worthy and Cyrus Allen to be your 1-2, that's a big dice roll. That's a major dice roll. A lot of unproven commodities there.
100%. I have Rashee Rice at number two on my most important players in this offense for so many reasons. The ones that you have already mentioned, absolutely. Taking pressure off of Travis Kelce. I feel like we've been asking this for the last 3 or 4 years. Like, somebody please, for the love of God, have more targets than Travis Kelce in this offense, instead of asking a 38-year-old to waltz around with 120 targets a year. I mean, somebody has got to take the reins as the main playmaker in this offense. It might end up being Kenneth Walker, for all we know. But Rashee Rice, it's put up or shut up time for him, not just for this football team, not just for the Chiefs this season, but frankly for the future of his own career and wanting to get a second contract in the NFL. You got to have somebody that can spread things out. Travis Kelce is a wizard in the middle of the field, the short and intermediate part of the field. You need somebody on the outside that can take some pressure off to open things up for Travis Kelce, to open things up for the running game and Kenneth Walker. I don't think that Xavier Worthy or Tyquan Thornton or Cyrus Allen are going to be those guys. Is Rashee Rice a great wide receiver one? No, he really isn't. But he is this team's wide receiver one. And it's about time that he plays up to that level. This team needs him to be. I mean, if they want to be a 9-win football team, then he doesn't have to be that guy. But if they want to be a team that wins 11 or 12 games and is trying to win the division and get a 1 or a 2 seed in the AFC, Rashee Rice has got to be the dude there.
Jay Binkley joining us in studio here. You're early, man. You're early. You're on at 2 o'clock. You were here at 11 o'clock this morning.
I had some other things to do too.
Yeah. Drew told me you were in. I was like, what's he doing here so early? I was like, tell him he can come in if he wants.
Rob and I we usually meet around this time, usually about 11 or so.
We were just talking, Bink, about the most important offensive pieces for this year outside of Mahomes. How do you rank it out? And I was saying that, like, you can make a case for a variety of pieces. I think Kenneth Walker would be number one on my list after Mahomes. And then to me, it's Rashee Rice or Josh Simmons, flip the two, and then it's somebody like Travis Kelce.
Well, I definitely think Kenneth Walker, because that changes the offense and how we look at the offense. It helps Mahomes because it helps the safeties. What are they going to do? You're going to have two high shell safeties, or are they going to be worried about the running game? Is Kenneth Walker all of a sudden going to be taken off and teams are worried about him? That opens up things down the field for Mahomes. I think Mahomes and Walker will play off each other. So I think Walker's very instrumental to the offense. Two would be Josh Simmons, I think. I think Josh Simmons is incredibly important because I look at the Chiefs in this offseason. Because if you read Jesse Newell and Vi, he had this, there were very similar articles of the Star and the Athletic. When Andy Reid talked to him about flying home from Las Vegas after they lost the last game of the year, saying, called over Mark Donovan and everything on the plane, saying, we need to talk. These are the changes we're going to make. They made this decision to go with new coaches. But to me, this is all in a phase. Like, this phase was about bringing in the running game and drafting defense. I still think they need to go heavy on offensive skill positions for Mahomes going to his 30 wide receivers tight end. I think that's phase two, to be honest with you. But definitely you don't want to add in a phase three and say rework the offensive line. That's why Simmons has to work out, because you don't want to scratch and say, well, we need to draft a right tackle now and a left tackle. You don't want to go back to that. You need Josh Simmons to stay solid for the Chiefs. It's vitally important so that they can go and work on phase one and two as far as skill position players and not really worry about the offensive line. That's why Simmons is so very important to the Chiefs, because I do think it's been in phases what they've done with their offseason.
Yeah, I think it's a two-year plan, and it was clearly defensive focus this offseason.
The plan's not done. You're not done with that receiver group.
Yeah, I totally agree. Now, when we look at tomorrow, you know, we were already discussed like who we're looking forward to seeing. I want to get into who needs to have a big day. To me, that's a different conversation than we're excited to see our Mason Thomas, but who needs to have a big day as in to make this roster, to solidify their spot. The obvious answer is Jalen Royals. Once again, it feels like he's the odd man out currently, unless Armstrong gets hurt, or, you know, I know Juju Smith-Schuster's out there. I don't know if they would bring him back, but what's your feel on who needs to have a big day tomorrow?
Well, clearly Jalen Royals, he's a guy that really squandered a huge opportunity. When you have Rashee Rice suspended for 6 games, and then you lose Xavier Worthy for 3 games in game one, and you still couldn't sniff the field, I mean, that's an indictment on him because, hey, let's face it, you had those top two receivers out for 6 in 3 games right there in the beginning, and he couldn't get on. So not really worried about him at this point. I think Khalil Benson, that's your answer. What do you have in Khalil Benson? And then how's Jalen Moore look over there at left tackle? Are you confident? Because what if that's a hole? What if that's a gate? What if that's a swinging door? What if that's a revolving door and they take advantage of that? Because if Jalen Moore is over there, and there's a reason why he's not penciled in as the starter. That's why Josh Simmons just boom. I mean, he just took Jalen Moore and just pushed him out of the way last year as far as starters. Because Jalen Moore was brought in a free agent, but Josh Simmons hadn't. Hey, he was coming back from the injury, but he put that to rest right away, made it no doubt he's the left tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs. So, yeah, I would concern about Jalen Moore. I'm concerned about a guy that can't beat out an undrafted free agent right tackle.
I think he has beat him out, though. He's going to be the week one starter.
I don't necessarily know that that's true. I mean,
I think the Trey Smith injury also made that more likely.
Of course, yeah. It's going to be shuffled up now. It's going to be shuffled up. But Jalen Moore had the job in the beginning. And then from day two through the rest of the 17 days of practice, it was Khalil Benson that was your right tackle.
And I don't know the definitive answer.
That's for a reason.
I don't know the definitive answer. My sense, though, and you've been around this bank plenty, you know that
for
they
sure,
also like to
concerned.
But they like to get guys looks that they haven't seen play. So for me, the big reason why Jalen Moore was not getting first team reps initially at camp is they know what he is. Khalil Benson is an undrafted free agent. They want to give him as many looks at right tackle. Then Trey Smith gets hurt, and obviously he gets bumped to right
that
guard.
That changes everything with Norzad or Kelly. Yeah.
Now look, for week one of the season, my prediction is that Josh Simmons will still be starting at left tackle. Trey Smith will be the right guard.
Agreed.
Jalen Moore will be the right tackle, barring this hip injury being a bigger deal. Who else do you think, Logan, that has to have a big day? Royals was the obvious
one.
I think it's
closer Benson and Moore. I think it's closer than you realize.
Maybe so. We'll find out.
Yeah, as I look to this game on Saturday, I don't know how much he's going to play, and I don't know how much of an impact he'll have on the Chiefs if he does make the roster. But if we're looking at it through that lens, Christian Fulton is a guy I feel like has to make a statement on Saturday, if he plays or not. I mean, he's looking at it from the standpoint of he's not a nickel or a slot corner, so that position's kind of already out, not to mention you got Kader Kohou and Jaden Kennedy. He's looking like cornerback four, maybe even cornerback five on this roster. That puts him in a real fringe position for somebody that the Chiefs brought in last year as somebody that you looked at as maybe an outside corner to kick Trent McDuffie inside, and then the injuries happen. Noel Williams kind of passes him over on the depth chart.
They have to go re-sign Snead.
Yeah, you went and got Snead back, who's already passed him on the depth chart. You get Mansoor Delane. Christian Fulton kind of appears like a guy that is certainly on the fringe right now, but from the standpoint of a guy I feel like needs to have a big day to contribute, I want to see Jaden Hicks have another good game the way he did last week.
Play a ton because Connor was hurt, so he had to play a lot. Real quick on the Christian Fulton thing, I'm with you. He's gotten passed up. The only thing is, he's not a cut candidate. He's either a fourth corner buried on the depth chart or they trade him. Mm. He's got $13 million cap hit. There's no savings. Yeah. So to me, he's either someone that gets traded guys after right before cut down for a late round pick and free up some money, or he's just on the roster as a very overpriced fourth corner.
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to get to running backs in a second, but back to offensive line, Gold. You look back at the last couple of years, like Trey Smith. Honestly, like, he was thrown in there right away as a starter. They didn't want a training camp. And never looked back. Josh Simmons was thrown right in there.
I understand.
And never looked back. That's why I'm saying, let's give Khalil Benson. And I also go back to OTAs, where Andy Reid specifically
Jalen
talked
Moore's
about him.
Jalen Moore's also making a ton of money, Bink.
Khalil Benson, he talked about him for 33 seconds. He never talks about undrafted free agents.
No,
I agree with you, though.
Like,
I think Jalen Moore has the upper hand.
They obviously like Khalil Benson. Yeah. Again, anytime we have these conversations, this is not me saying I don't think Khalil Benson can be good. It's just that Jalen Moore has an $18.6 million cap hit. I still think they're going to give him every opportunity to be the tackle week one. By week eight, I don't know who the hell the right tackle is, so he can lose his job.
You might be right. I mean, who knows? Jalen Moore might be there. But I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what DeMarcado can do, because I love this running back stables they have, because DeMarcado, we know how good of a blocker he is in the National Football League, and Emmitt Johnson, that was his knock coming out of Nebraska. Not only some of the combine results he had, but also the pass blocking, which that's number one, Andy Reid. It's pass blocking number one, catching number two, running number three. It's that order.
I'm with you.
With Andy Reid. And DeMarcado is very good at that. And if you're going to have troubles because guys are not healthy on the offensive line, the last thing you want is an unabated defender going straight to Patrick Mahomes, the meal ticket for the Chiefs. The last line of defense is that running back. That's why DeMarcado becomes so important to pick up those blitzes, because that's the last line of defense there for Patrick Mahomes' way. And also, limited opportunities in Arizona, but when he did get the ball, he was an explosive guy. I mean, his yards per carry were real high. I mean, DeMarcado did the job. So I'm curious if he'll get the run, get running a little bit more in this game for the Chiefs.
I'm kind of with you. I'm really high on Emmitt Johnson. I have been for quite a while. He was a guy I talked a lot about during the draft process. But you're right, and we talked about it earlier. If I'm Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy, and I have that belief that Emmitt Johnson can be this team's running back too, throw Jerick McKinnon highlights up on a smart board and just make him watch. Because that is the quintessential running back two, third down back that the Chiefs want. Jerick McKinnon was utterly unbelievable in his role, and he played it to perfection. If Emmitt Johnson can be that guy, I think that it kind of puts a thorn into the side of who the Chiefs kind of think DeMarcado can be for them. But if he continues to be, you're right. I mean, the numbers suggest he's been a top five pass blocking back since he came into the NFL. I just don't know how much run he's going to get because we didn't see him until the fourth quarter of that game against Los Angeles. Is this a situation where he plays the entire second half, or how do you factor Breshad Smith in and Emmett Johnson's carries? I'm just curious how much of him we're going to get a chance
to
see.
He's also the one that got yelled at because he dropped the football before the goal line. Remember that? They played the
Cardinals. Well, that's what prompted what's-his-name had to apologize because he kind of shoved.
But that was DeMarcado.
DeMarcado.
So I actually love the stable of running backs. Even guys on the practice squad like Jade Knott. I mean, he's not on the practice squad yet, but he will be. This is the guy that went to the Senior Bowl. He had a couple catches for, 20-something yards? 40.
Big Jay Knott guy you are, Bink.
Jay Knott, he'll be on the practice squad, hopefully, but they are incredibly deep at running back.
They are. No, it's a much better running. He was saying that that's your guy, Jay Knott.
Oh, I like Jay Knott.
Did he not hear me?
You couldn't hear Drew talk?
No, I right there at the end. But no, he was a senior.
I didn't know your headphones were working.
He and Cyrus Allen were Senior Bowl finds. Neither one of them went to the combine. Chiefs went down to the Senior Bowl. They like Jay Knott. Obviously, DeMarco Murray here helps that situation while he's here. This guy led the Pac-12 in rushing 2 years ago, back when they had Oregon and UCLA and USC in the Pac-12, played on that Fernando Mendoza team at Cal. Cyrus Allen got invited to the Senior Bowl because he showed out at the All-American Bowl. So, I mean, the Senior Bowl proved dividends so far for the Chiefs draft.
Chiefs Bucks tomorrow night right here on 96.5 The Fan. I did see, though, in Tampa, they're doing an alternate broadcast, or at least they're having John Gruden on their Bucks preseason
Chucky
game.
Vision.
But Gruden's going to do play-by-play. And then he's going to do play by play. And then Rondé Barber will be the analyst.
Oh, boy.
And so there was the Rondé Barber show, and there was a couple quotes. Gruden said, quote, "This might be a concept you never know. Concept could be a game changer in the broadcast booth. I mean, there's been a conventional way. I sat up there for 9 years and did it. Mike Tirico was there. It was a cadence, 1st and 10. It's da 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 da. And then you have to be timely in your responses, get out before the next play. But I think as long as we're on the same page, we love the Bucks. We're going to try to really educate the fans on some of the position battles, just the excitement of opening day. I would love to just hear what the hell that's going to sound like.
I want to hear it, but he's an analyst.
Is there a way to listen to it?
It's going to be on the Bucks.
Or is it only Tampa local? Or is it on their website?
It just says...
It'll probably be streamed somehow.
It's going to be via joebucksfan.com.
Mr. Buck?
No, that was the quote.
That's the quote. No, it's going to be an actual broadcast. I don't know if it's on radio or TV for Tampa. But
I know John wants to do this, but John's an analyst. John's an analyst.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's...
I mean, I know he wants to do play-by-play, but this is where he's really good as analyzing the game.
But he said it's going to be different than the normal play-by-play. Okay. He basically was saying, like, I'm not going to sit here and say 1st and 10. Yeah, yeah. Okay. They're going to, like, have... It feels like it's just going to be more conversational with
like
two football guys.
Stuff, in a way.
It's an all-cast.
Yeah,
it's going to be broadcasted locally on WFLA, News Channel 8 in Tampa.
You can stream it on NFL Plus if you have it, maybe.
I'm waiting.
Okay. There you go.
How many over under on the amount of times that John Gruden sees something during the game and says it's got him feeling nicey?
Good. 5, 6.
I'm just ready to hear him break down a play. Spider 2Y banana or something. I'm ready for that.
That's the thing I'm concerned about is like when you get two football junkies the way that Gruden and Rondé Barber are.
That's Caliendo doing Gruden, I think, actually.
Let me tell you about this guy, Ruben Bain. He had short arms and everybody was scared about him. Let me tell you, this guy's an animal. Let me tell you about this guy. It's Gruden.
Oh, if Ruben Bain gets a sack,
14 out.
Oh,
14 Ruben. Out. Silva. Silva's hot.
And what if I got the fucking...
Let me tell you about this Ruben Bain.
I'm just afraid, when you get two guys that are just football minds the way that those two are, like, the thing about traditional broadcast that makes it work is that you've got the guy that, like Gruden mentions, a guy that brings a cadence that gets you in and out of plays,
like a
in
Mr.
And
Buck.
In and out of commercials and those sorts of things versus these two guys that are just football guys, like... How are they going to manage this? Just two guys that want to talk about the game itself and the X's and O's?
It's fine for preseason. We were just talking about the all-cast yesterday where McAfee's going to do Monday Night Football all-cast. I don't like all-cast unless the game stinks. If it's a competitive game, I want the traditional broadcast. This is a preseason game, so if you're a Bucks fan, you're down in Tampa, this would be perfectly fine because preseason games get boring anyway.
Yeah, I know ESPN does a lot for the college football playoffs and stuff with the using all their different channels. I still find my way back to the original broadcast, man. I still find my way back to Herb Street, you know, listen to him and his analysts.
So I'm with you.
I do. We'll check those out, like the Skyview and stuff like that, but I always go right back to the broadcast.
I hope
so I'm
100% clips.
With you.
I hope there are clips that come out because I'm not spending money on NFL Plus for one game of hearing John.
Oh, I guarantee you there will be some clips that surface.
I'm ready for the clips.
I'm sure there will be. Bink, good to see you, man. You'll be filling in for CDOT this afternoon. We got Bink on board for our Circa Survivor contest.
Let's
He's part of the group. I guess we got to find out if everybody's on board. I think everybody, we're going to be out in Vegas next week.
We were good last year. I mean, very good.
We didn't do Survivor, though. We did Circa Millions. We were in the top 100 for like 1 week.
Yep.
And then we fell very far out of that.
It was a great week.
But no, we're doing Circa Survivor this year. And so we'll pick a team. I can't wait for our arguments on which team to use what week. That'll go over very well.
Yeah, because week one is a liar, man. Don't forget, you know, all these teams that win, like the Raiders beat the Patriots.
One of the popular Survivor picks week one is going to be the Tennessee Titans against the Jets.
It's just like last year. What would you do? New England goes to the Super Bowl. The Raiders end up picking first.
They lost.
Yet they lost at home to the Raiders. Mm-hmm. Week one can be a tremendous liar. So that's always the scary one, is getting over that hump. Then when you get to week four, week five, it gets a little bit easier.
Up next, let's get to what's trending. Let's talk more about what we're looking for tomorrow. Not who needs to have a big game, but just a couple players we're looking forward to. And Drew's quarterback was talking yesterday. Drew's very upset with how people are discussing Joe Burrow. We'll do that next.